Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. I'm your host, Adam Horner. With 30 years in the industry, including over a decade as a CTO, I have coached and mentored more than 100 engineers and tech leaders. This podcast covers crucial topics for CTOs, providing insights, strategies, and practical advice to help you build and refine your own playbook to excel as a CTO. Today's episode is all about the fundamental question, are you worth following? My guest today is Adrian Stanek, CTO of Weber and a thought leader in technology and culture. He's widely recognized for his engaging leadership videos on both YouTube and LinkedIn. In this conversation, Adrian shares his hard-earned lessons from early on his own leadership discovery journey to becoming a CTO who leads not just with authority, but with a vision that people actively want to follow. We get into Adrian's four-part playbook for becoming a leader worth following, covering credibility, being a role model, crafting and communicating a vision, and creating meaningful challenges for your team. Whether you're a new CTO or a seasoned leader, this episode offers actionable steps to inspire your team, build intrinsic motivation, and leave a lasting impact. So settle in as we get into this essential conversation with Adrian on what it means to be a technology leader worth following. Adrian, welcome to the CTO Playbook. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me. I'm happy.
Good stuff. I mean, a lot of people have probably seen some of your videos, but for those of you who haven't, just tell us a bit about your journey through leadership and how you got to where you are today.
So leadership came to me a little bit like unforeseen and suddenly. And I think I realized late that I'm actually in a leadership position. And that is was the time where I actually was not that kind of leader. I would, let's say, how I would define leadership today. It's more like the typical management person, you know, like the boss type of person. That was it. It was, I was probably 15 years now being an entrepreneur myself. So I was joining a company back then. So not, I wasn't the founder back then. So I just joined an existing traditional company. I basically provided a technology-driven part there. So it was literally very traditional in the sense of media. And the IT grew, the company grew. And actually, yeah, then I became actually a leadership person.
Did it take you by surprise as you came up through the ranks?
Yes. So it's a little bit like you act always when you start and you are in the trenches yourself, you act like a person who's executing. And when you work together with other people who are executing as well, you are basically the pushing type of person, right? So you just tell them what to do because you think you know it better, right? You probably can do it better or faster or something like that. So you think the best way to lead people is actually to push them to become better in what they do. And the idea behind that is not totally wrong, but the execution is totally wrong. And that is, yeah, what came later in my, when we switched to Weber, the current company, I took many of the developers with me. And that was basically the time, a little bit before that, that I actually realized that I am pretty bad in leading and I was pretty ignoring. And that changed. That changed a lot. I basically started writing about this. I started creating video about that. And that was a form of therapy and learning for myself and to help other leaders to actually become those, right? And become less of a boss.
So did you start writing and doing the videos as a way to sort of teach yourself? Or did you start learning first and then do the writing of videos afterwards to pass on what you learned?
The videos were a reflection of, and the blog I started back then was a reflection of what I was actually doing and going through next to the technical things I was writing about as well. But mostly it was leadership on some point because I realized that it made the biggest impact on everything. So everything I've tried to level up performance was actually, yeah, it wasn't very great until I realized what real leadership is and what empowerment means and that you actually leverage what you have there in terms of personnel. And that was my biggest learning. That was the reason, why I'm going through the videos and try to express that into something others can learn from as well. That's the reason why I'm talking so much about juniors and seniors, because seniors for me personally are not just another pay grade, or that they actually can use CLI next to code or something like that. For me, seniority means the first step of real leadership in a team, the cornerstone of being a team. And that's one of the fundamentals for me. And this is the reason why I'm talking so much about it, because leadership is not only the person who's actually have that in the title.
Yeah. And was there sort of a moment, an event, or a particular memory you have of being conscious of that difference between follower and leader?
Yeah, I think that the moment when you actually have the, let's say, the accountability for things, and you are in a trench, in the trenches at the same time, you probably have problems to draw the line if you're actually a person who should follow others or, you know, or lead by yourself. And I think it is the moment where you can learn it the hard way when things go wrong, when people might leave, when projects fail or something like that, then you learn it the hard way. Or you actually can learn it in a, let's say, in a way where you are in full awareness. And that is definitely when you understand when you should step back a little bit out of the trenches, be still with your people, but to start to actually lead them. Because just an example, if you have 3, 4, 5 people working directly together with you, it makes more sense to basically use 100% of your time to leverage what the others are doing instead of working together with them. And that is actually the critical point where you understand or where you first realize that, hey, when I am actually not helping the others or actually leverage what the team could offer in that moment or could bring to the table, then you're actually doing things wrong because you don't get to the performance you actually need. Because just adding some person to a team doesn't make this team actually faster. Sometimes it makes it even slower. And only the leadership aspects, which actually removes roadblocks and, you know, those kind of things, enables communication, free communication, because there are so many other different aspects why people don't communicate. That is when you understand that, hey, is your team actually stalling or is your team moving forward? Is it in motion or not? And that is when you actually find out that you are a leader when your team is in motion. And when you are just still a follower, just pushing people, you're probably not a leader right now.
And did you have a particular sort of memory of feedback you got from your leader, from your boss, or from, you know, figuring out on your own that, oh my goodness me, I'm going about this in the wrong way?
I needed to figure it out myself because I had only a business partner. So he was basically on the same level and I was just in a more the CEO type of person while I was the CTO type of person. So there was no one who told me that. And I actually, some employees who got the guts to tell me, told me that actually. So this is how I figured out first that I actually doing things wrong. And I basically took a look at my partners back then who basically were like I am, more in a negative way. And then I first saw the negative aspects of that. I understood that when someone else started to reflect me, but I actually had no leader whatsoever above me who could tell me that. There was no feedback for me.
Got it. So that's got to be quite an unusual route where you figure out leadership by from the people who were following you, quite literally.
I was lucky, actually, that the people told me and that we had a good So I haven't done everything wrong. So there was enough space that people trusted me enough to tell me. So probably they saw some potential there. And yeah, I took it. Luckily, I took it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And so in terms of being a follower then, I mean, do you have memories of yourself being a follower and looking up to people and thinking those are great people to follow? Those are people who I respect, who I want to follow.
Actually, I hadn't so many people.
So that lack of a role model must have been quite important then.
Yeah. So let's say in my years beforehand, it was very rough, let's say. It was the typical industrial age thinking. I'm always talking about that as a problem because I see that they're basically everywhere. So I'm coming from Germany, and that's a very traditional country. And you have this typical, there are some people I respected and where I said, okay, that was this type of what I first saw as a good leader was this, I actually only expect something from others, which I would be not willing to do myself, those kind of things. I had those, right? But they weren't very high in the ladder. They were more like the sergeants in the companies, but not the high-ranking officers. High-ranking officers for me were always managers. I never saw a leadership person that, never ever in my life before that, before those days, actually. Today, I see those on LinkedIn.
So you kind of had to be your own role model in some ways then.
Yes. So of course, there were ideals, but I never saw these ideals at the person next to me. That's actually rare. And this is probably the reason why there is a need out there, right? So take a look at LinkedIn. And there is, just ask some person on LinkedIn, there is a high chance that they are not happy with their current leadership. It's very high.
And do you think that's more so in technology than in other areas of business? Or is that something that you think is just ubiquitous everywhere.
Is even though that, even I would say that in the IT space, there is a higher chance that you actually get some good form of leadership because it's a very modern thing, which we have there, especially in the US market. I think it is more common than in the EU market. I would say in the typical non-tech driven things, you have this typical military-like structure still. So there's the boss and the, you know, sub bosses. And it's a vertical, right? And in modern IT spaces, especially startups or scale-ups, you have this flat hierarchy, hybrid working model, oftentimes totally remote working model. And especially in remote, this management stuff doesn't really work anymore anyway. So I think it will become better in the IT space very soon.
Cool. And do you think as you get more senior and you end up with not just individual contributors following you, but when you become a leader of teams, so therefore a leader of leaders, do you think this concept, this idea of being a good follower and having role models as a follower becomes more or less important?
Yeah, that's a good question. So you always should take a look at what you can leverage. And there are some rules out there, how many people we can actually, I was writing about that actually. How many people you can actually manage effectively. And that is an ideal number of 5. And there is this up to 10 people. This is what you can actually directly influence in a positive way. And what I mean by that is really working together with the people, creating bonds, trust each other, and creating, you know, the foundations of actually leading people. What you can't do is you can't lead 100 people. So that's fiction, right? So that's this typical thing where we see armies and there's this one leader in charging. No, that's actually not leadership. That's something different. That's basically commanding, right? And people are just following the commands because they are, trimmed to do that. But what we need to do, what we need to understand is we only have this 5 to maximum of 10 people of a team size. So when I become leader of leaders, I only have the leaders, let's say below me, and now in that moment now, are actually my team. So I can't focus on anything else than that anymore. So it wouldn't make sense. You can't lead anything else effectively.
Yeah. Have you come across or been yourself in situations where you've got a mixture of leaders and individual contributors reporting to the same person?
Yeah. So I think oftentimes you have that one team is working differently than another team. So I hope that answers actually the question and I get it right. But you can have one team where you have a very flat hierarchy that you don't really have a team lead there. It's more like it's a typical team of seniors who are working like that for years, right? And then you have the next team where you have a lot of juniors and a team lead who is a senior and tries to get everyone on board. And that's a different thing. So in the first one, you have more people actually working still on things and try to follow each other, though there's a mixture of things. While in the other, you have a more hierarchical thing. And you have that at the same time because in the end, you're actually thinking in units. So when you want to do things effectively, you can't treat every team the same. You need to make sure that every team can work in its own constraints and the ways it's working, right? So it's basically how it consists, actually. And so you need to create the thing in those units.
I've had that myself as well, where you end up with, as you say, different people, different teams, different ways of working. And as a leader, I find I end up sort of almost context switching the mode of how I interact with them. Some of it's sort of straightforward senior versus junior, but some of it's also sort of self-starter, delegator versus somebody who is, because they're not so familiar with the leadership, your pattern of interaction has to change with them, more hands-on, more like micromanagement, even if it isn't or wouldn't be classically called micromanagement.
I didn't get the question, to be honest. Can you repeat that?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, when you're going through the same thing and have those different modes of operation, you end up with context switching and therefore context switching has a cost like it does in any other kind of context switching.
Yeah, you do. So, and that's why I mean, you need to focus on the leadership. So you should, you know, get out of the trenches then, because that's not your job anymore. You need to make sure that every of these units can work and there are no roadblocks actually for those units. But what happens inside those units is not your concern anymore. There is someone reporting to you, but you are not supposed to actually do something about that. So other than helping that particular leadership type of person to get things better, you know, to mentor that person, help that person, remove some, you know, obstacle outside of the unit. But in the end, those units are ecosystems in themselves. So basically, there are people inside there They have their emotions, they have their ways of working together, the ways of communication. And so IT is not a military unit, right? So it is not a structure like that. You need to leave some room. So we always talk about ownership, and ownership can only grow in environments where people actually do it in the way they want to do it. So otherwise, they don't take this ownership and responsibility. You will never see a mature way of working if you tell them exactly what to do.
Yeah. So what are some of the key traits of where you end up with a leadership position, but you're not actually leading? You know, what does that disparity look like? How would you recognize it if you yourself are in that position where you're a leader in name, but not in effect?
I think you would recognize it, or should recognize it, or take a look for actually this process, which is stagnating, sometimes even stalling, but most of the time stagnating. So it is especially when you start to dictate deadlines, right? Just as a tool to get things moving again. So it's not just to mitigate a problem you probably have as a company, right? A higher thing or something like that. No, it's like the typical thing. It's like you put a deadline, and when this deadline is basically passed, you put the next deadline. And when you have that, and this is most often exactly those kind of things, then you know you're actually just a managing person. So you manage by putting basically the next steps, the next iterations, you define it for others. And when you realize that you are actually the leader, then the people are actually moving and defining those things by themselves. And you only provide the vision and the high level goals and the ideas and the challenges. And that is how it works. So they basically expect that from you. So when people have expectations to you, then you know there is actually this follower leadership relation. Because if you don't have that, is no one is actually asking you something. I had that quite often in mentorings, for example. People told me, leadership type of persons told me, hey, I came back from vacation. I had that several times. I come back from vacation and no one is asking me, no one is reporting anything. It's like I'm not there, right? And then you know in that moment you are actually not a leader, and you should ask yourself the question, am I worth following? And that is the big thing. This is how I came to that phrase, actually. So you need to, it is important that people actually follow you and come to you. Like, we need to do this instead of this. They need to tell it to you because they have understood what is the strategic goal behind that. Why are we going to do this? And they tell you the best way. And this is when things are in motion. The other way around is you tell them exactly like this. No, planned economy. This is the reason why those planned economies never worked out, right? They are totally driven by some whatever things from above. What you need to have is things coming from bottom up. And because that shows that, first of all, you have explained the vision and all these kind of things that people actually need to have. You explained that very well. And you are the person that they actually follow through, because they come to you and actually, they report to you out of intrinsic motivation. That is when you know that you're actually a leadership person.
So the red flag there, well, there's kind of two you went over there, one really. One was sort of dictating deadlines. And maybe we could just generalize that, almost using that as an extrinsic or external motivators, external sort of stick to push things along. And I used the word push there quite deliberately. And then the other one was, essentially, if you were to remove yourself from the equation, you would almost be replaceable, or at least you could be missing from the machine and it would not be an issue at that point.
When you are a leader, yes, you could be replaced because you have empowered other people. So you are more like a beacon in the night, let's say. So people know where to go. And the effects when you're actually leaving, there would be no other leader, is something in the future. So in the next month or next weeks, you would see that there's direction missing, those kind of things, right? These kind of, you have suddenly roadblocks and things get more into stagnation again. That is, but this is not a direct effect.
Yeah. It's quite difficult to tell the difference then between that whole, I as a leader go 2 weeks away on vacation and come back and find that people aren't referring to me, versus I can step out of the machine for a while, things will carry on running, and I can step back in and it's smooth. That's quite a difficult one to discern, is it?
Yeah. So let's take a look at the contrast. It's like when you are the deadline-driven manager, the boss type of person, you can't actually go into holiday really, because probably after the first week, you already have problems that people cannot work anymore, or there is maybe something wrong and you need to rearrange things, those kind of things. This is the typical person who always does the...
So the high escalation scenario then.
Exactly. This is when you are on vacation, you always have your laptop and your phone with you, even if you are on a hyphen trip. And that's the typical kind of thing when you are basically the negative motivator. And if you are the positive motivator, you empower people. So people will know when you are not there what is to do because they have understood where to go. And that is basically, there are great books like Extreme Ownership, which teaches that as well, where it's about the mission. When you understand the mission, even the officer can fall and you could even follow the mission. And that's the same idea.
Yeah. Another military reference there.
That's a good thing for, let's say, the short term. But of course, in the long term, you need to be there in order to give good direction. Otherwise, people will lose orientation. And, you can empower people, but you don't make everyone a high stake leader. It is more like you make everyone able to take the next iterations. It is more like this. This is the reason why you need to be there and why people will come to you and will report to you when they actually don't know what to do, or they think you could basically change something in order to get to find a shorter or more efficient way to the goal. But it is a fine-grained difference, of course. But if you understand the outcomes and how the people react, it is all about how your followers react to you, react to what you actually do. Then you can see then. Let's put it like this.
Yeah. Right. So I think one of the other things I'd like to pick up on as well is the distinction between when people give you trust by default. So let's say, for example, you become a leader of a new team and people start out, they give you the benefit of the doubt versus when they don't give you a chance in the first place. Like, is there something we can look at and generalize in terms of, okay, I go into a team and I never had a chance in the first place?
I would say that it always depends on what you find in the team, right? So let's say you are a leadership person type. So you are already aware of those things and you join a team, and in this team, there is already this stressful person, that's this extremely dominant person in that team. And everyone else is looking up to that person that is actually already a leadership person in the team, even though it might be just a senior type of person. I have that so often, especially in mentorings, we have that very often. And then you have this person and everyone else is actually quiet in the team, but only this person is speaking. This is the spokesman of the team. That is where you, no matter what you do, you have to solve this problem first. And sometimes you have newly assembled teams, there's totally different story because that relationship never created between the people. So you actually can very quickly do some successes there and create a new successful, supportive working culture there. And you can establish yourself there because you basically have everything like a greenfield project for yourself. It's a little bit different when you are not the manager type of person, because if there is in the first scenario this dominant person, then you try
somebody with influence then, basically.
Exactly. But you try to be the dominant person. So what you actually do then is two alphas fighting. That's what actually happened. That's the worst kind of scenario you can have. And that is always pretty often, follow up like a layoff thing, or, you lay off this person and then others will leave as well and those kind of things. That's a very problematic thing. So it's always best to join as a leadership person and try to solve things and understand that not every situation can be solved instantly. For some situations, you need to build up and create the right space that actually the culture can grow. So culture is like a garden. So you can prepare everything. You can, prepare good soil. You can have enough water. You can make sure there's enough sun and enough shade, stuff like that, right? And then they need to wait until things grow, right? You can't just pull on the plants and they will actually rip off instead of growing. And that is the very same with people. People need to grow. That's something most people cannot really understand, or I think nobody really understands, because it is basically what happens in subconscious mind in us, right? There's just those bonds, those relationships we do, and we need to understand those. So in order to be a good leader, you need to understand those, what actually happens there. Why is this person actually a dominant negative person? Because there's probably not a negative person. The person is, there is a reason why you have the perception of someone very negative, someone who is against you. And you need to understand why, and you need to do something about that without removing that person, because that person can be very valuable. That person is strong. That person could be a leadership person. And you need to know what to do in that moment. And that's actually what I think the most companies out there have as a problem, because there is always, so especially when you have existing teams, you already have this kind of structure, right? And you need to understand how to learn to work with that, because the greenfield version is quite easy to solve.
Yeah. But so turning that leader into a follower, is that the only path, or is there a, you know, a different route we can take? I mean, because it sounds like you've got very particular experiences. That'd be great to hear sort of a slightly more detailed story of an example of that happening.
You can lay off people. Most people actually do the layoff part, which I don't like, because it is a very, sometimes you need to do that because, yeah, reasons. But in my opinion, it's always best to make this person a follower person, because what you actually want to do is, this is the unit, and you join this unit, and what you want to do is, as I said in the beginning, you want to leverage the potential of the unit, which means you are not in part of the unit. You are actually one, you are the gardener of this garden, which is the unit. So make sure and make clear that for this negative dominant person, that you are not a threat, right? And that is the biggest, this is what I meant, you need to understand those people, because people perceive things either in form of motivation or resistance. Resistance is basically there every day in every human being. It's basically not possible that this isn't there. So there is always some resistance to change, resistance to follow others, resistance to... There are a million reasons a person get right now that this person will fight reasons, actually, right? And you need to understand those. And you need to understand why you are not a valuable person for that person. That is important, because a follower follows you because of value you provide, not because of you as a person. Otherwise, it would be management and a hierarchical thing. Then, you know, we are in another scenario. But if you want to be a leader, you need to provide something worth following. And this person then needs to understand, oh, when I actually work with me in that moment, then I have, you know, benefit from that, and the others will have that as well. And then you can, and in that moment, you can start to shape this unit into the direction that this unit is actually following the overarching goal again.
So again, it comes down to being a better leader than the existing sort of de facto leader, such that you have bigger, I guess, you know, believability, credibility than they do. But secondly, that you're actually providing more value than they are to them and to the others, such that you are more followable than they are. I mean, quite literally.
Yeah. And then you will see this typical thing that the others will see that as well, right? That there are always others in that team. And it will basically weaken the bond between this negative person and the others. And it will strengthen your bonds with those people. So you have more balance in that team. And this is where you can start to do things with the people, right? Because that's always about threatening people. So when there is a dominant person and there's a person coming, this means change and no one likes change. And you need to take the fear of change, right? There's always this, hey, we need to get this trust right together, that we understand that we need to change something that will become a little bit uncomfortable, but we will become comfortable again and will be better for you. It will be better than it is today. And these kind of, this narration, this notion, you actually need to do in that moment.
And is that something that, as you go through that, is that something that you have a sort of particular approach to build and put together? Is it something that's different in every single case? Or is there some sort of general rules that you follow to get through that transformation moment?
So first of all, it's your own credibility. So if you are a person who, I said that in the beginning, that, you know, you can only expect things from others to do when you are actually willing to do it yourself and you actually do it. So the quality aspects or the credibility aspects, like, hey, I actually get something done, right? So that's, you know, I talked about deadlines. Not working with deadlines doesn't mean we need to be on time. That doesn't mean we need to not be on time, right? So that means that we still need to do that, but the motivation is inverse. So we are motivated by ourselves, intrinsic motivation, to get things done other than, you know, others pushing us to do that. And that is, you know, when you as a leader doing things, you need to be that kind of role model in that moment. So credibility and role model are very closely connected. So the credibility is the very first thing.
Right. So that kind of builds that sort of a pull leadership versus the old school or less valuable push kind of leadership, which relies on an external motivation like deadlines.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I would totally say so. Yeah. So, right. The role model is the role model aspect is that others can take example from your actions. So you narrate something like the vision, which is the third part of that one. You narrate something like that, and the vision must be compatible with your own actions. So if you tell something about, hey, we need to do this and that, and you basically are the total opposite of what you tell, it doesn't work, obviously, right? So you need to be in alignment with your own vision. So you need to be that vision, right?
Yeah. Okay. So you undermine your own credibility if you don't live up to the vision and standards that you're asking others to.
Exactly. And that's the value. So when you are this typical person who is on time, who is actually doing quality work, who is obviously someone who is a career person, maybe even, right? And others actually want to be a career person as well, or they just want to be a successful person, right? In whatever they do, then you need to be the role model kind of that. So you can't, you know, talk about a vision where everyone becomes more successful, will earn more money, right? But you don't get things on time, you forget about things, you forget to send things, you forget dates, you just forget to join meetings and you just disappear. Those kind of things, those very basic things already really hurts you, right? You excuse too often, right? Everyone will have excuses, right? But it must be genuine, must be understandable and relatable. So it's like you need to do those very basic things. And of course, when it comes to, let's say, more professional qualities, like if you're in a tech industry, something like that, you need to make sure that when you make decisions, they are actually profound, and that when you work together with people and you expect them to work together as a team to take ownership by themselves, first of all, you need to leave them the room. And second, you need to work together with them and accept what they have to say. So you can't tell them, hey, we have a new style of leadership and it's bottom up, right? And then you don't let them doing bottom up because you tell them every step anyway after they have told you something. That doesn't work, right? So you must align yourself to the vision and the ideas of leadership you teach in that moment.
Because otherwise, without that, nobody's going to actually start replicating what you're doing. Or at least people are more likely to replicate what you're doing than what you're saying.
Exactly. The biggest problem here is no one tells you that you do something wrong. What actually happens is everything is, that this is a silent process, a silent quitting. You know, there is this silent new leadership person. You basically, that is often how those dominant sub-leaders actually evolve, right? They come out of nowhere. This is this person who actually is some kind of revolt which happens, right? This is this person who tries to make things better than you, probably not in the direction you want to have. That's the big problem about that. But this is what you need to understand. So, I mean, that's very often because we had that scenario. You are a leadership person getting into this existing team. Why is there this dominant person already? Because, you know, your predecessor probably they've done something wrong there, right? So you need to take over a team which wasn't well managed, right? And yeah, that's actually the thing.
Yeah, okay. I think I really get that now, because I think there's another way around that I look at that, which is that nature hates a vacuum and something will move into a vacuum. And so therefore, if there is a sort of an abdication of leadership or an inadequate leadership, then somebody else will step in to be the leader, whether you intend there to be or not. So another way of looking at being the role model is, if you aren't doing things in the right way or the way that you are saying it should be done, somebody else will do it in a way that gets copied, because somebody will end up being leading. And if it's not you, then that's where you end up with this challenger situation.
Yeah, that can even be the problem from outside. So that's the immediate problem is the person inside the unit. But if you don't perform on some point in time, it can be a person from outside who shall substitute you, because you talk a lot, but you don't, you know, do something. You don't deliver results, as people say. And then the bottom is against you and the top is against you. That's very bad for you. And that is all based on you are actually not a role model, because you would be a role model if you follow your own vision, because the vision was what you basically sold to your superiors and you sold to your people who actually follow you, right? And if you can't live up to that vision as a role model, being a credible person in that moment, you actually cannot do that. You have failed as a leader. That's the simple result.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so we've covered number one was credibility. And I presume that also covers some of the technical aspects as well. If you're not technically credible, people aren't going to follow you technically either.
Of course. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns for many CTOs out there who actually are more the type of business CTOs. You have that often in middle-sized companies, right? Where CTO is not coming from the ranks of the engineers themselves. And sometimes they actually try to find ways to learn Kubernetes programming languages and stuff like that basically overnight, because they think, if I can't do that, I am actually not a credible person. I agree, but it depends. I actually don't like to say it depends.
It's one of those most flexible answers in IT, isn't it?
I don't like it because it is a little bit lazy. So let's fill the void here, right? So it depends on if you're actually supposed to do that. So if you are a senior engineer, if you are a principal engineer, and maybe you are, as a principal engineer, you are not coding anymore, but you are expected to know a lot, right? To help a lot, to remove a lot of roadblocks, to simplify things, to understand things on multiple levels, on multiple layers, right? Then you should do that and should be able to do that. If you are a senior engineer, you should be able to do good code. You should be able to simplify things and to do code reviews. You should be able to mentor others, right? You should be able to communicate even. Those kind of things make you credible. But as a CTO, that's a different thing, because most people as a CTO still think, hey, I need to impress people. You don't need to impress people. What you need to do is you need to provide that value. You are a leadership person. And you don't provide value if you have people there working 10 years with Kubernetes and you come there, you just, you know, took a course this weekend and then you try to lead this. That's work. That doesn't make sense. You will never keep up with those people. And that's not your job. It is not your job to impress them. It is your job to provide something worth following, right? So that those professionals with Kubernetes actually do the right things and do, you know, make the right decisions based on the narrative, the vision, the mission you actually provide. And that is, I would say, the differentiation. So you should be credible to the point of your expectation, but you need to think about your expectation and become aware of what is actually something you can do or value for others.
And I think that's a really, really, really powerful point, especially for those, as you say, who don't come from the technology side. But even for those who have come from the engineering side, your value is probably, as a CTO, no longer with your technical knowledge, but on your facilitation and literally your leadership.
Yeah, it's hard to switch for the people. Right?
Absolutely. Leadership isn't necessarily easy, is it?
Yeah, especially that, you know, CTO on several years ago, CTO was basically used in way more company sizes than it was used before. So smaller companies now use that as well. And you have this typical change, you know, this founding engineer, and then you get to the five people, I have 10 people, and then you have 50 people. Yeah, on which point you're actually a CTO and which point you're a coder. And so the point is, you need to understand that what is the idea of the CTO?
Yeah, what kind of CTO are you? Yeah, I actually did an episode on that a few episodes back. So it's probably one for people to review if they're coming across that one.
There are probably multiple perspectives, and I know there are multiple perspectives on that. So my take is CTO and the engineer are two heads you have at the same time. And you need to be aware of that, and you should not mix this, right? So in a company with three people in a development, and you probably have at least some, or to some portion, the head of a CTO, you don't have a full-time job as a CTO then. But if you have 50 people in the IT department, you have definitely a full-time job in the IT department. And this is how I see those things. So you need to be clear about that. The CTO is a pure leadership role model. And of course, a little bit of management as well. You need to decide some things, but you should get as soon as possible out of the trench. That is what should be your goal, right? Only have one head and focus, because otherwise you can't leverage what the team or your teams or the company could do, because you are still focused with, hey, I need to fix things. I need to change something. I need to simplify the code. No, you don't need to. There are other people who should do that, right? And those kind of, this is how I differentiate that. So there is this middle ground where you have two heads, very uncomfortable. You should get out of there as early as possible.
Excellent. No, that's a really common point and a really good one for people. Cool. So we went through credibility in depth. We went through being a role model, which I think is a really key point and probably very, very applicable across all levels of the organization from the top to the bottom. But you spoke about the vision quite a lot as well. Can you just tell a bit more about your perspective on how a clear vision has an impact on being a followable leader?
That's an interesting point. And I want to make sure that everyone understands why a vision is important, because there are two types of vision. First of all is this, hey, we have written down our values. It's on a Notion page. That's our company values now. Yeah. Okay. Doesn't work. And you have the vision, which is actually lived by a convention we have internationally. So every human being does understand the sometimes called the Ur story, right? The story, or sometimes the hero's journey. That's another version of it. So it is about you being on a journey, right? And that's this typical thing you see in all movies, in all books, from the antique until today. And this is the vision. And if you are able to narrate this and make everyone a good protagonist in that story, so everyone is part of that story on a journey, then everyone is compelled. There is an ignited spark there. There is interest. There's interest to follow. What will come? I will be part of that. And that is the interesting part. In every movie we watch, we basically envision ourselves in that movie, right? That's the reason why we like those movies, because we can relate to the protagonists. And that is the very same when you do a vision. And this is the reason why I'm always telling about you need to learn storytelling, because the vision is a pure story thing. It is not like you have some visions after you have taken some drugs or something like that. No, it's totally about, it is basically a narrative you talk about there. There must be at best, you have your 3X structure. You have right now a problem. Everyone is in there. Everyone feels that problem. And then basically you go to some place and it will be hard, right? You need to push through as a team, and you have hard days. You have, you know, you have nice days, those kind of things, those ups and downs. And on some point in time, there is a big change. You have done something. Everyone feels that. And everyone asks you, cool, when do we go into the next episode? Right? So it is about those kind of things. It is not about, hey, we need to get 10% more revenue as a company. That's not a vision. That's not a vision. That's numbers. That's, no one is interested in those, because too far away for everyone, especially developers. But if developers understand, hey, this is the story about we creating an application that will be hard. People will start to use it. We will get feedback. We will understand that. And we will see that other people will have value about that. And this is what we have done. We can be proud of that. We will have a safer workplace, those kind of things. You need to pack that as a story and help people to be part of that journey, of that hero's journey, and everyone is the hero. And that is the value if you reverse that is the value of you being the leadership person who's telling that story, you know, telling that this is the interesting part, and everyone else will follow that story, not you, because you just provide the value of that story.
Right, so you become the narrator of the story. You're sort of the, as one other person put it to me, you're the Alfred to Batman. You're the butler to it, rather than being Batman himself.
Exactly. So you need to make, again, a little bit like the gardener. You don't grow, but you make sure that everyone else can grow. But everyone else realizes that you are there. That's the point. So you are a key point, a key figure, but you are not the goal. That is most often what people don't understand. Being a leadership doesn't mean you have groupies who just follow you because you are a person. It is just because you basically provide a value in the future, a challenge, which is actually a fourth point, right? The challenge, which is actually, you know, the stake. So when you want to have change, and that's one of the parts, when you want to have change, you need to be afraid of something. So because if you are not afraid of something, you don't need help from a leader. So if that's easy, because you have done that 10,000 times, you don't need a leadership person to do it again. But if you want to get to some point, for example, to the end of the story, right, of your vision, then it must be challenging, because otherwise you don't need someone to actually get there. It would be good, but it would probably mean that there is no gain as well. So as soon as there is something to gain, we feel resistance, because resistance, you know, and fear is interconnected. So we are afraid that we maybe are not able to do that. Maybe we are alone. Maybe, though there are many reasons why we are afraid to actually, that we cannot reach destination by ourselves. This is the reason why we humans like to work in tribes, like to work in groups, and we like to be together on these journeys. We like to watch movies together, not alone. And those kind of things are all interplaying. So the challenge must be something which is so intriguing that we think we need to go as a group there, and we need to have a leader, right? And you as a leader need to make sure that everyone understands the challenge and that there's actually a challenge. That is the combination between managing part. The CTO is perfect for that, because the CTO role basically defines the goals and narrates the vision.
Yeah. And I think also as well, when you've got that challenge, it's not only that there is a big challenge and that it's tough, but it's also understanding for each person individually what's their part of the challenge, which of the bits going to be a challenge for them to achieve. So that they, I mean, that sort of creates the, yeah, you were talking before about intrinsic motivation. And without a challenge, people aren't going to be motivated to do things in the first place, to get out of bed and actually go tackle something.
Exactly. So if they don't have a leader and there are, let's say, high stakes there, they probably stay in bed. So that's the problem of a society. That's the reason why not everyone is basically rich and successful. It is because we have a lot of resistance, and that resistance is simply there. So the reason why this is not really clear, but it is there. And it basically keeps us from doing too much stuff, right? And a leadership person actually infuses this intrinsic motivation. It creates a spark there that everyone else gets into motion and actually, you know, overcome resistance, even though a good leadership person is able to tell everyone, hey, that is actually resistance and we will overcome that. And we have the opposite force, which is actually an obviously assistance, right? This is when we actually, you know, we work together and we see then, oh, that everyone is actually working together and making the first step. Then suddenly resistance is totally gone and replaced by assistance, as everyone is assisting each other and pushing towards this goal. And everyone tries to support each other to become faster. So that is the very opposite. And then it's when things are removing. The problem is, next day, we all wake up with resistance again, and we need to start all over again. And that is what a leadership person needs to get done on greatly on a daily basis. So resistance is the enemy number one of every team and every company. And you need to understand that and overcome it every day to a degree that on some day, it is not even a challenge anymore to overcome resistance and focus on the real challenge yourself.
So, yeah, so while resistance is enemy number one, if you don't have resistance equally, you've not got a starting position anyway.
When you don't have resistance, you have no stakes. There is no challenge. That is actually, you have no reason to start. This is the reason why you need to provide challenge.
Yeah, cool. And so if you end up in a situation where you've got credibility, you're acting as a role model, you're showing up, you're doing all those things, you've got a good vision. So you've got an idea of what the future looks like. You've got this narrative, a story of the status quo, some challenges you need to go through and a place to get to, but the challenge just isn't that great, or doesn't feel that great to some or all of your team. Is there a way in your experience when you can sort of create challenge or simulate challenge or have a synthetic challenge in order to make things happen in a way that they get towards that goal, even if that goal isn't on the surface actually as difficult as other people believe it is?
Yeah, so that's the point about one step back to vision again. So you actually narrate something which infuses again this idea of, hey, that's valuable for me, because value is where the challenge is. So when you understand how to get someone to believe that there is value to get, then there is challenge in the same moment. And if you can't do that, you obviously don't get the people to actually follow a challenge. Because, for example, there are people who tell you, I just want to do my coding stuff, the same stuff every day again. And you say, oh, it's fine, just do that. So there's no challenge. You don't need to have vision. You just leave this person, do whatever this person is doing, and nothing changes. Basically, it actually worsens, right? So people become...
Because it'll stagnate.
It will stagnate, even stall in some process, some time. And that's the problem. So you need to make sure that, hey, actually, we need to go on that journey. We need to, for example, hey, there is a... Let's take something technical. So you have two developers, and they are still working on a very old version of a framework. And they don't want to make it a leap to the next version. They always say, oh, this is so... Things can go wrong, and we have so many reasons why, you know... Let's just stay on the old version. It works. Don't change the running system. No, you need to change this running system to a new, better running system. And that is the challenge. So if you agree to not change, that nothing will happen. Everyone is happy. No resistance. And the change is where the resistance is. This is why processes will become faster. Software will become simpler. We will reduce the problem of a legacy system greatly. We'll probably reduce technical debt as well. There are so many reasons, and the personal reasons, they are just, hey, you learn something new. I always tell other leaders is to tell the people that they will become more valuable persons. They will become better professionals if they learn more. Even though if that means that, hey, that this person could leave the company, you shouldn't be afraid as a leadership person that a person is actually leaving you, as long as you provide room to learn and challenge to learn.
I've rarely met an engineer who doesn't want to learn more. It's almost a motivation in its own right with most engineers.
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons why it is so easy, what I said in the beginning, to transform an IT landscape with a good leadership methodology there. But you have those. Sometimes people are simply afraid to do things. And you need to bring these values, right? You need to talk about these values. You need to make clear that, hey, that you will become a more valuable person. And your process, your work-life balance will become better because, hey, maybe this current framework, you have a little bit of problem that you always need to be, you have this typical, hey, on weekends, we will call you. You might have a pager or something like that. And with the newer things, we can maybe do it a little bit more, let's say, resilient, those kind of things. This is, of course, fictional now, can be thousand ways to do that. But it is about that. So you need to narrate what will become better for this person. And it must always be a challenge because challenge means it becomes better. And the value is that this person is actually a protagonist in that story and will, you know, participate on the outcome.
Cool. It sounds like a very, well, on the surface, relatively straightforward playbook then. So, but to become a really followable leader, we need credibility. We need to act and be a role model. We need to have a great vision and be able to tell a story around the vision. We need to have something that creates a challenge, not just now, not just next week, but an ongoing, continuous challenge. And I think one of the underlying things that was ran all the way through what you're saying is we need to become, as CTOs, as leaders, really great storytellers.
Exactly. That's a perfect wrap-up of the four big points, which basically never ends. So you always have them in a cycle, but you need to become better in those and basically change over time. But you basically wrapped it up perfectly.
Yeah. Brilliantly. And so if you were to talk to a CTO who's in their first or second role and you've just gone through this, you know, if there was one other thing you'd say to them to really focus on, you know, one tip you'd give to early stage CTOs based on your experience, what would that be?
Good point. We've gone through actually the important things already. So I think understanding resistance and assistance or the muse is extremely important. Understanding the differentiation between I'm a C-suite person, I'm working together with other C-suite persons, and that I'm actually the translator between the C-suite and the business and the technology, and that I need to remove the disconnect between those worlds. So I am not only the bridge, I am the person who is closing the gap. It's extremely important. As actually one of, I would say, next to those four points, you need to remove the disconnect, because the disconnect is what on large scale leadership means. Because how can you expect that everyone else follows something if you are disconnected from that? It's simply not possible. So you need to make sure that the mission is connected to the business so that the developers become on some point, to some degree, business people.
Excellent. And so you as a CTO need to become the translator, as you put it, between those two. Excellent. Love it. Adrian, it's been fantastic to speak to you today. And thank you very much for sharing your playbook with us. How do people get in touch with you? How can people find you online?
LinkedIn, Adrian Stanek on LinkedIn, easily to find.
Yeah, you're quite unique on that name.
Yes. And Snackable CTO on YouTube right now.
Yeah, because you've got a fantastic collection of videos on there that are really worth going through.
Yes. I'm a little bit more like on YouTube, I'm a little bit more practical. While on LinkedIn, I'm more like the leadership type of thing. So I have two things in my mind I want to express, and those are, you know, spots where I'm doing that.
Excellent. Great stuff. Well, we'll leave links in the show notes so people can find you online where you come from. It's been great speaking to you. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for tuning in to all of you to the CTO Playbook. I hope you found today's conversation really insightful. Don't forget to go onto the website, join the community to find more resources. And if you'd like to connect with fellow CTOs, the link will be in the show notes. Keep leading with impact. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on. Leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.